Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. And now, here's your host, John Hanson, with Greg Cosell.
Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. I'm John Hanson. It is Thursday, May 7th, the NFL draft, obviously in the rear view. And it is time to break it all down with our guy, Greg Cosell. And that's exactly what we're going to do right now. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you today?
Doing pretty good. Pretty good. We're busy at the website, fantasyguru.com. We encourage all the podcast listeners who've never subscribed to the website to head on over there and check it out. We have not raised our subscription rate. Greg, this is an impressive record in 20 years. So check it out at fantasyguru.com. All the offerings are up there, what you can get, and all the benefits of subscribing in 2015. Greg, NFL draft is in the rearview mirror, sir, so it's time to break it all down. You ready?
I'm ready, John, as ready as I'll ever be.
I know you've got myriad notes in front of you and electronic devices to help you. No, it's all off the top of your head.
It's all in my brain, which I don't know if that's good or bad, John.
It's good. It's good stuff. So we'll start in the NFC this time around. Let's start in Dallas, Greg, because in the fantasy world, the big news coming out of the draft is essentially what they did not do, and they did not draft a running back, and they've got a bunch of guys here, obviously Darren McFadden. You've got Joseph Randall. Ryan Williams, believe it or not, hanging in there, was on the practice squad much of 2014. We keep hearing that they're very high on him, and I know years ago at his best, we liked that kid a lot, but your thoughts on these guys, and they could bring someone else in, Greg. First thing I did while working on some post-draft content is I went back and I looked at some of Joseph Randall's runs. And look, maybe some of that was against a worn-down defense. And we all know that the O-line is unbelievable in Dallas. But I kind of like what I saw. I saw some lateral agility. I saw a little bit of long speed. He's kind of like a Murray. He can be a receiver out of the backfield. Kid's got some off-the-field problems, but I'm very intrigued with him. And I think Dallas is too, but any thoughts on this backfield as it stands now?
Yeah, you make an interesting point because ultimately I know they brought in Darren McFadden, but I think that Joseph Randall will ultimately be the guy that they count on more. Now, whether that can play out for a full season, that remains to be seen. But there's one thing to really remember here is Dallas changed their entire offense last year. They became a pure run-first team. They ran the ball almost 70% of their offensive first-down offensive plays, John. That's a high percentage in today's NFL. And really, the run game and DeMarco Murray were the foundation not only of their offense but of their team. So are they going to be able to play the same way? That, to me, is one of the most fascinating off-season storylines because Dallas reached the playoffs. They were 12-4. After being kind of a 500 team for years by really changing the way they played on offense, and they need to play the same way.
What's amazing, Greg, you go back to 2012, Romo threw it in 16 games 648 times. That's a big number. It's a healthy number. This past year, as you know, 15 games, but 435 times. And you would think, oh, that's terrible for fantasy, but it really led to more efficient play, 34 touchdown passes and only 9 interceptions. So they are rolling the dice here. And I get the sense that they're like, okay, well, we got a bunch of guys here, and we're going to try and maintain that identity. I would, again, agree with you totally and put Randall at the top of that list. McFadden, Greg, I understand he's a gaping hole runner, and there are gaping holes to be had, but, boy, he's looked bad. I think he's done, quite frankly. He looks slow. He looks more indecisive than ever. Do you have any thoughts on McFadden? Maybe he'll prove me wrong.
This will be his last and best shot because he's playing behind a very good O-line that gives you room to run. One thing about Murray last year, and it's no disrespect to Murray, but there were a lot of holes. He was not hit a lot until he gained a certain number of yards. I forget what that number was per carry, but McFadden is a downhill guy, which really Murray is too, and this is the best team in the league for McFadden if he's going to have some success. Now, that's a big, big question mark. The one thing I will say about McFadden, that good year he had a few years ago, John, in Oakland, where he averaged all over 5 yards a rush and gained over 1,000 yards. He ran hard. He ran with a punishing style. So he's very stiff. He's not really laterally agile in any way. But if he can run really hard and powerfully behind that O-line, then he may have some success.
Oh, if the Darren McFadden of 2011, the first seven games of that year, that's the year you're talking about. That
correct,
he got hurt.
Correct.
He got hurt, but boy, he was bringing it big time. Any other thoughts on Randall before we move on? Look, he's not a stud, but I kind of feel like he can be a difference maker behind this O-line.
Yeah, I like Randall last year, and you know, he didn't get to play very much, but when he did, I thought he ran well. The big concern for Dallas is, can one back do what Murray did? Because carrying 392 times in a season, John, is really, it's hard mentally. And it takes a certain mindset. And we don't know if someone like Joseph Randall can do that. My guess is it will be a committee situation. And we might see two backs, each with, you know, 170 carries and 130 carries. Of course, that's assuming Darren McFadden can stay healthy, which has really been a tough issue for him.
Yeah, no doubt. And finally, with Randall, I do think yard per carry average can be quite revealing at times. And 2013, 54 carries, 3 yards a carry. 2014, 51 carries, 6.7. Now, he popped off some long runs, but that's quite a leap. Moving on to Philadelphia, and the move for Marcus Mariota does not happen. So we all know it's going to be Sam Bradford and Mark Sanchez in the mix, but let's talk Nelson Aguilar. I know, Greg, you're a big believer in, you don't need stud talent at receiver in this offense. So I'm sure you like Aguilar. What are your thoughts on him in the offense, basically taking over the Macklin role and the state of this overall receiving core? And I'm sure you believe it's good enough to certainly continue to run this offense efficiently.
Well, I think it's the way Chip Kelly believes. I think he would like his receivers to be multidimensional, that he can move all around the formation and create. And I think that's why he chose Aguilar, let's say, over Breshad Perriman, who I imagine he saw as an outside-the-numbers receiver.
Right.
I think Aguilar fits well into this offense. You know who I think the wild card is in 2015, though, John, on the Eagles' offense as far as the receivers? Josh Huff.
Yeah. Totally, yeah, because he can play inside and outside, and he played for Chip, obviously.
And I'm sure you're all over him already, but I think this is the year from rookie to second year where I think Josh Huff becomes a far more significant factor in the Eagles' offense. And it would not surprise me at all if the top three Eagles receivers as the year progresses are Jordan Matthews, Nelson Aguilar, and Josh Huff.
Yeah, totally, because I guess if you take Breshad Perriman, you're essentially pigeonholing him into the Riley Cooper role, and as you said, he likes the versatility, and also I can throw out a name for what it's worth. Miles Austin is kind of like that too. He can play inside, outside. Thoughts on, I guess they don't go, you know, three wide a ton, but when
they do.
Yeah, I guess they do. When they do, you know, what are your thoughts there between Aguilar and Matthews and, of course, Riley Cooper and perhaps a Josh Huff? I guess who's the odd man out most?
I think as the year progresses, Riley Cooper will be the odd man out.
Sure.
But let's assume it's Aguilar, Matthews, and Josh Huff, which I believe it will be. Then yeah. I think what you're looking at is not a specific defined positional group where you say,
exactly,
so-and-so is an X, so-and-so is a Z. I don't
right.
think Chip Kelly lines up like that. And I think that's the reason he drafted Nelson Aguilar. I think, as you mentioned, and you're correct, Josh Huff can play inside and outside. Matthews essentially can do both. I think he's better inside, but I think depending on usage and formations and everything that Chip is very, very good at, then I think you can see Matthews moving around as well. So I think he's really looking at three receivers as he looks ahead that can line up anywhere in the formation.
Yeah, I like kind of everything kind of lining up and here's the X, here's your Z, but that's a pipe dream for the most part.
In this offense and the way Chip sees it, I believe that won't happen in my view.
Yep. Moving on here to the Giants, and not a big splash here, but you do need to appreciate how they're continuing to try and to upgrade the O-line. They used the number one pick on Eric Flowers. Greg, I know you weren't thrilled with Flowers. You didn't.
But I think if you line him up at right tackle, which is where they will,
right.
I think he can play there. I saw him as a guard, but I think he can play right tackle. He's a powerful, powerful man. That's the strength of his game. He's a run blocker, and he has those kind of prototypical traits. Some have compared him to Anthony Davis when he came out of Rutgers. I thought Davis was a little more athletic than Eric Flowers, but Flowers can be a tempo setter on your offensive line. He's that kind of physical player.
So they'll probably move Justin Pugh, the former number one pick a couple of years ago,
inside.
So now you're looking at an O-line of, you got Will Beattie at left tackle. You've got, I guess, John Jerry at left guard, and that's the big weakness. Weston Richburg, second round pick last year, I believe. Jeff Schwartz, hopefully healthier. Okay, so yeah, Schwartz and Pugh will be the guards. Okay, so they're good there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty decent line, Greg.
No. Richburg was, as you said, a number two pick. Pugh was a number one. Flowers is a number one. So they're doing the right thing. They're building an O-line.
Yeah, and I bring this up because I kind of liked Rashad Jennings last year for fantasy, and I think people who followed that advice at least understood where I was going, because he owned that backfield, and he's a real solid runner. But that line stunk blocking for the run. So with the addition of Flowers, we think that's going to be a little bit better and improved, plus the health of Schwartz.
And the movement of Pugh inside, which I think most people believe that's where he should play when he was drafted out of Syracuse. So I think that this draft Flowers was drafted with that intention, John, no question.
Defensively, did you like Odighi Zuwa?
Yeah, I did like him. And I think that he's a work in progress with a lot of traits that you really like. I think he's in some ways a little bit of a lowercase Ziggy Ansah. Obviously, he wasn't seen that way. He's smaller and not quite as explosive, but I think he has somewhat similar traits. And he was a third round pick. Again, guys like that, you don't know if they're ready right away, but I imagine if he is, he'll certainly play in sub packages as a pass rusher.
Hey, they've got a lot of good track record with Nigerian players through the Giants. Moving on to the Jerry Reese said that Victor Cruz is actually well on track for training camp. So this offense, Greg, maybe Eli will get the 70% completion percentage, more effective running attack and a lot of weapons.
Look, just a final point. As you know, John, Eli has a reputation and a perception publicly, and some of it's very well justified. But last year, he had a very good year and did not turn the ball over very much. But because he has a certain reputation, people really didn't think about that. But he did not throw a lot of interceptions last year, and I think he had the highest completion percentage of his career.
Yes, and he was like last half of the season, I want to say, he was in the upper 60s. So people were laughing at him about that 70% completion percentage, but he was just about there. And I remember last year in May, we do our annual powwow with you and others at the worldwide fantasyguru.com headquarters. And we're going to do that on Monday, actually, for this year. But you said it right out of the gate. This is a great offense for Eli, and you broke it down, and we kind of went with that as well. And that preseason was scary, but It did all come to fruition. Let's talk about Dallas or Washington, actually. Well, not much to talk about, really.
Other than they've made it clear, really, how they want to play. You don't draft Brandon Scherff with the fifth pick in the draft if you're not looking to run the football as your foundation. They've made it clear how they want to play.
Well, I keep hearing that, Jay Gruden obviously is not a fan of RG3, so they certainly need to run that football. Do you have any thoughts on Jay Gruden, maybe, and maybe this selection has something to do with it? Maybe the drafting of Matt Jones has something to do
Correct.
With that.
Yeah, I was just going to add that.
More power running, Greg?
Yeah, I was going to say with Scherff and with Matt Jones in round three, and I liked Matt Jones and thought that he could be a really good second back for a team, or a committee back, however you want to call it. And now with Morris and Jones, Jones is, I thought he was a big, powerful guy. I actually really liked Matt Jones. You know, he's not good enough to be the foundation back, but if you pair him with another back and they still have Morris, then you have yourself two pretty powerful big guys. And now with Scherff, they're telling you how they want to play. They also drafted Ari Quanjo in the fourth round, the guard from Alabama. Now, he's a question mark, but again, it speaks to how they want to play, John, what they want their offensive profile to be.
Well, it would make a lot of sense when it's RG3 at quarterback. And I'm sure Alf Morris, if they transition a little bit more to power, I mean, I'm sure he can run it, but they've been predominantly running zone there, obviously, from the Shanahan days. We move on here. The FantasyGuru.com post-draft podcast, along with Greg Cosell. I'm John Hansen. We're doing the NFC. We're rolling through here. Pretty good time in that division. So we'll keep going at this pace. And we go over, let's go NFC North and let's go Minnesota, Greg, because it certainly looks like Mr. Peterson is going to be there for the Vikings. And obviously that is huge in terms of Teddy Bridgewater and his development. So now it's Teddy. Let's say it's Peterson in the backfield. Let's assume he's fairly content for now. You do have Charles Johnson in that X spot, Wallace, Jarius Wright. They drafted an intriguing kind of a Swiss Army knife guy in Stephon Diggs. Kyle Rudolph, one of these years, he's going to prove me right and play all 16 games. The kid Michael Pruitt, they're pretty loaded here, Greg. And TJ Clemens fell, I believe, to the fourth round, but I believe a lot of people thought he was a second round talent. Matt Khalil had the knee surgery yesterday, so if he can heal up, maybe that explains. Two knee surgeries for him, Greg. Maybe that explains the drop off in play the last 2 years. But, you know, just as a general thought, Greg, things are setting up really well on paper for Teddy Bridgewater in year two.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that they've got good weapons. They still have Cordarrelle Patterson, by the way.
I'm not familiar with that person, Greg.
There you go. So obviously this is the critical offseason of his career, but he's the most talented receiver on their roster in terms of physical talent. So they do have a lot of different ways to attack defenses. And they've got a very savvy quarterback who understands who to get the ball to, will not likely turn it over as far as picks. I think he has to get better at ball security in the pocket, but that's a different element. But I think you're looking at a pretty consistent offense, especially now with AP back.
Yeah, and you got second-year Norv Turner as well, so they're a little more developed working with Norv. So things are definitely looking up there in Minnesota. In Chicago, they're kind of stuck with Jay Cutler for another year. I know Adam Gase and the new regime, they kind of want to pull back from the responsibilities of Cutler, which is probably a good idea. I'm sure they'll look to run the football. Kevin White and Alshon Jeffrey, though, you throw in Eddie Royal and Martellus Bennett, and I wrote about it in the Stock Watch. I'm like, well, here we go again with Jay Cutler, because they are in pretty damn good shape at receiver.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they clearly wanted White once he fell. I mean, it didn't take them long to make that pick, and he's a quality pick, a big kid. They've got two big wideouts. They drafted the center in the third round from Oregon, Grasu. And I thought the Jeremy Langford pick in the fourth round was a very good pick, because Langford is another kind of second back, a committee back. And I think that speaks to how they'll likely play, John. I think you're going to see them focus on the run game. They want to manage Jay Cutler. They want to control Jay Cutler. They want Cutler to be an orchestrator. They don't want Cutler to be the lead dog. And I think that that's the right way to play. And you need two backs if you're going to play that way, particularly since Forte. And I love Matt Forte, but I think he's 30, 31 years old now. So you need that second back if you're going to play that way.
Do you see Langford ever being a legit lead back, or is this a puzzle piece guy all the way, right?
I do not, because I don't think he runs heavy enough. I think he runs a little light. He's got good feet, but I don't think in an offense that you're going to really feature the run game that he can be the lead back, because I don't think he runs heavy enough inside.
Does give them an element we've not really seen in that backfield in a while, with some speed. Because Langford obviously did run the fastest 40 at the combine,
right
there.
Although, you know, it's funny you say that because he doesn't necessarily play like that. I mean, he's quick. I'm not suggesting he's slow or plodding, but he's not one of those guys you watch on film and say, wow, that guy's a burner.
Sure. But we're used to Forte and we're used to, you know, Michael Bush you know, working in the mix. It's been a while since we've had a guy who can move a little bit as a complimentary guy. They also added Jacquizz Rogers as well. And for what it's worth, John Fox in the past, and it could be irrelevant, but he has utilized kind of a tandem backfield. I don't see a guy worthy of more than 100 carries. But Forte, at some point, we're really concerned about Forte. Obviously, we love him too, but he was down sub 4 yard per carry last year, and that's coming off of 4.7, Greg. Boy, again, man, he had a lot of work at Tulane and a lot of work.
No, I agree with you. I agree.
You know, if you're out there in a dynasty league, it may be time to kind of sell, basically. I mean, you'd rather be a year too early than a year too late on a guy like Matty Forte. Let's move over, Greg, to the Green Bay Packers. Not much going on here, which is, you know, probably a good thing. They didn't make any major splashes in free agency or in the draft. They did a lot of work in free agency, but any thoughts on the Brett Hundley pick? We were talking in the office. It kind of feels like a wasted pick because unless Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, this kid has got no chance of playing in Green Bay.
Well, you know, Green Bay's had that tradition of drafting quarterbacks late in drafts for whatever reason, whether their backup's there, whether they end up getting rid of them down the road, as they did with a number of quarterbacks over the years. You know, I can't speak to why they made the pick, but I think it was about the right spot for Brett Hundley. And okay, Mike McCarthy does run a great quarterback camp up there. So Brett Hundley, who you have to start from scratch with, will learn how to play quarterback.
Let's go to Detroit. And the Lions, the big move there is the drafting of Amir Abdullah in the second round. And Joik Bell has been sub 4.0 yard per carry the last 2 years. He's been productive. He's been kind of a, you know, a jack of all trades, maybe a master of none. They do like Theo Riddick. You know, Abdullah is obviously very intriguing. It's a tough one though. We love him. We love almost everything about him. I met him at the combine. The kid is outstanding, outstanding character. That's known. But he's small on the small side, and you know he's got some pass pro and fumbling issues. Your thoughts this year on this backfield, and then long term for Abdullah and you know the Lions are like a stretch zone team. Is that a good fit for him?
Yeah, it's a really good fit for Abdullah. He's a zone runner. He did a ton of that at Nebraska. I think he's good in the pass game as well as a receiver. As most backs do, he needs work with blocking, but I don't think it's because he's unwilling.
Yeah.
So I think this is a really, really good pick, keeping in mind that Joe Lombardi, their offensive coordinator, came from New Orleans. Last year was his first year in Detroit. I think Abdullah could be a Darren Sproles-type player and maybe even play a little more than a guy like Sproles did in New Orleans when Lombardi was there. But I think they envision him in that way, and he's very explosive.
There you go. So that's another weapon in this offense, and they needed some weaponry. They used their first pick on Laken Tomlinson at guard. That's interesting, but look, I'll take it for the fantasy world. This O-line really underwhelmed last year. They lost Dominic Raiola. They had a lot of injuries at Waddle at right tackle for one. Do you have any thoughts on Stafford and this passing attack in year two of Joe Lombardi's system and the offense? They're not going to be throwing it 675 times a year. I'm sure they want some balance, maybe run it a little bit more than they have, you know, in like 2012, 2013. But to me, it all kind of comes down, not all, but a lot of it does come down to Eric Ebron. I mean, he's a number one pick. It's a tight end friendly offense. You got Calvin and Tate. That's real good. Stafford still has a great arm. He's got to come through Ebron, but just any general thought on this offense in year two of the system, Stafford in particular?
I think they expect Ebron to improve significantly. I think he was a little overwhelmed last year. I think they're looking at him as a 50-catch guy, not a 90-catch guy because of their wide receivers. And I think the key with Stafford is he has a lot of those gunslinger traits. In some ways, he has a little Brett Favre in him. And I think they're walking that fine line in how much to sort of control and manage him and how much to let him be what he is. And that's a really fine line. I think they'd like to control and manage him a little more. So I guess we're going to see with his second year in the system how that plays out.
Gotcha. Moving on here to the NFC South. Let's go to Tampa. Obviously, they make the move at quarterback and bring in Jameis Winston. I actually think it's kind of a positive for the whole team, really, in the fantasy world, Greg. We kind of like it for Austin Seferian Jenkins. Jameis Winston did throw quite a bit to his tight ends at Florida State. He does throw with that anticipation down the seam. And also for the weapons on the outside, he's got a little Eli Manning in him, Greg, in that he's not afraid to make, you know, throws into small windows and ask his receivers to make contested catches. He's got kind of amnesia. He'll sling it all around. So I think it's probably a good thing for the wide receivers on the outside, Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson and Austin Seferian Jenkins.
There's no question that's the way Winston plays. You know, as we've discussed, he has traits that you like. As they transition to the NFL, he'll be the starter from week one. That's not even in question. So I think it'll be an up and down year, but he could put up some numbers. He might throw 24 picks, but he'll put up numbers. And you know, now the O-line becomes the issue, and they did draft two O-linemen with their two second-round picks. In an ideal world, both guys will start, but that remains to be seen. So the O-line is definitely a concern because even though Winston has some functional movement, John, he's not really going to avoid and create. He's a pocket quarterback.
Yeah, for this offense, the offensive line is really the main thing to watch all offseason and in the preseason, almost as important as Jameis Winston and also running back. Doug Martin, I'm kind of waving the white flag. Bobby Rainey is he's around and he's pesky in the fantasy world. To me, it's all squarely, all attention is on Charles Sims. I know he's not a stud runner, but we did see the versatility last year. Greg, I don't think he was ready to play last year. I know his film as a runner was not good, correct?
No. And they need a back because this is an offense. Winston is essentially a prototypical NFL quarterback who needs a run game. So they really need a run game too. They don't need to rush for, you know, 2,200 yards or anything like that, but they need some kind of consistent run game. And you're right. I think since they drafted Charles Sims in the third round last year, if memory serves me correctly, yeah. I think he'd be the player that they're looking to become that guy. And again, it's an offense where he doesn't have to carry 320 times, but they need some kind of consistency in the run game.
No question about it. We'll see about Doug Martin. They're not going to pick up that fifth year as expected. In New Orleans, they continue, Greg, to tell us, even if they kind of dispute it, I know Sean Payton kind of poo-pooed the notion that they're going to be even more run-oriented a couple of months ago. But, Greg, they continue with their moves to tell us that they are going to run the rock. Obviously, the drafting of Andrews Pete. They don't draft another wide receiver. They don't draft a tight end. Greg, they're gonna be, dare I say, committed to the running attack. What are your thoughts, though? And I think this is obviously good news for Mark Ingram. What are your thoughts on, I can't believe I'm even saying it, but their ability, Peyton's ability, to fully utilize C.J. Spiller? Spiller's got some issues in pass pro. He's underwhelmed at times in Buffalo. There were some trust issues there. Now, obviously, Peyton did a great job with Sproles, but a little bit of a different player. What's your confidence level in Peyton's ability to take full advantage of Spiller? Because I think I look at this offense and I see emphasis on Ingram, Spiller, and Brandon Cooks and almost everything else after that.
Well, you know, I think that Spiller, he'll use him in a similar fashion to the way he used Sproles, but I think he'll use him more. They re-signed Ingram, who obviously had a very good stretch last year, and I think if they're going to run the ball more, Ingram will be the feature guy, but there'll be packages for Spiller. And Spiller can also line up at times as a foundation-type runner. So I really think, John, that Spiller is going to be a significant part of this offense because they need his big playability. I mean, Cooks obviously has some big playability, but after that, you know, I think they're lacking in some areas, and I think Spiller does provide big playability.
Yeah, and that's the best point of all. They really need explosiveness offensively, considering you look at the current state of this roster. And I don't think you've seen much of Josh Hill, but he's going to be the guy. Sean Payton is pretty high on him.
You know, I think one final point, I know we want to move on, but keep in mind that Sean Payton, I think, is looking at his entire team now. We think of Sean Payton as an offensive guy, and he is at his core, but he's the head coach. And they had the second, you know, they were terrible against the run last year. I think they allowed the second most yards per rush of any team in the NFL. And on offense, if you start to run the ball, you shorten the game, and you take pressure off your defense. And I think he's starting to think that, hey, you know, I can't just toss it around. First of all, Drew is not exactly the same guy he was 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. And I may not have the weapons right now. And we're going to build our team a little bit differently.
I don't know if either Zach Strief or Teron Armstead can slide inside. I would like to get
Armstead's going to play left tackle. Armstead's, Andres Pete will start off at right tackle, but Armstead, he's the kid from Arkansas Pine Bluff, I think.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's got tremendous athleticism. They're not moving him. He's their left tackle.
True. Yeah, I know. I was just talking about the two guys. I guess it would be Zach Strief.
Well, Streif's in his 30s. Jari Evans is in his 30s. I mean, they needed to address that side of the O-line, and Andres Pete will get a chance to start at right tackle.
Yeah. No, well, obviously, certainly he will. Yeah. Okay. So the O-line, though, overall, plus Max Unger is a lot better than it was when the season ended there. Moving on here, Greg, to Carolina. And I kind of liked the addition of Devin Funchess. And look, we'll see if the kid can separate in the NFL at wide receiver out wide. But look, Cam Newton last year had great success with Kelvin Benjamin. We talked about it over and over again. Big bodied receiver, wide catching radius. Cam's not accurate.
That's the whole point. That's why this pick makes sense, because they know what kind of quarterback Cam Newton is. Cam Newton doesn't make receivers better. He needs receivers to make him better. And now you have two guys who are 6'4", 6'5", as you mentioned, and it's the exact right point, wide catching radius, because they need to help Cam. Now, the one thing they don't have is anybody who can run. And that's because they still have Cotchery, assuming he makes the team. And that's something, you know, that every team would like to have, is somebody who could lift the top off the defense. But they still need receivers who are big with a wide catching radius.
Yeah, because I was wondering if they'd go with a complimentary guy to Benjamin, but no, it's all about those big big receivers who can catch the ball in a wide radius away from their frame. And I guess Philly Brown is gonna be their de facto deep threat. He kind of was.
And they
last
like
year.
Him. They like him. So let's, you know, look, he did well last year toward the end. He was able to make some plays down the field. I think they feel that he can be, you know, if not quite that true vertical guy like you think of a Mike Wallace, but I mean that he's the receiver in their group of receivers who can get over the top on occasion.
Moving on to Atlanta, and it's interesting the selection of Tevin Coleman. Big time production in college. Yeah, I know that. Most of these guys who were drafted fairly high were studs in college. But Coleman is a guy that we did have some questions. Can he be a sustainer? Which is ironic because we kind of have the same question about Devonta Freeman, Greg. But straight up, I assume you believe Tevin Coleman's a better fit for this zone blocking scheme in Atlanta.
Well, you know, Coleman's a home run hitter. You hit it on the head with the question about him as to whether he can truly be a foundation back, and they may not even view him that way. He was a third-round pick, and they do have Devontae Freeman. I think you're going to look at running back by committee here with those two guys, and Coleman can certainly hit the home run. Now, the player I really like who they drafted, and particularly with the loss of Harry Douglas to free agency, I think Justin Hardy is one of those guys that could step right in from watching him on film, a really precise player, understood how to work inside extremely well. I think you might see him as their slot receiver from day one.
Well, you're going to have to, Greg, because the alternative right now is Leonard Hankerson, and we know we can't rely on him.
No, we can't, but, I mean, again, you're talking about a fourth-round pick, so obviously they drafted him to be that guy. My feeling is he'll be ready early. You know, a lot of times you draft guys for a role, and they're not necessarily ready early, but I think he'll be ready early.
Well, that's good to know, for sure, because I'm a little concerned about the lack of weaponry here for Ryan, because him and Harry Douglas came out the same year in 08, so they've been together. They were together 6 years, and, you know,
right.
I watch every year, and you know, you could see the chemistry between those two, you know, continuing to develop. You know, Greg, what happens if Julio goes down? I mean, they're screwed. They've got Roddy White, Leonard Hankerson, the aforementioned Hardy. At tight end, it's Toliolo and all these other guys, Jacob Tammy and Moiaki. I mean, it's
thin. I mean, I know what you're saying, but obviously you could say that about any team's big-time receiver going down, but Julio does have a little bit of an injury history. But if they're, you know, if White, who's getting up there, but if White and Jones can stay healthy, they're okay at receiver.
Moving on to the NFC West, and let's go to Arizona. I want your thoughts on the rookie David Johnson. Interesting player, but how about this O-line? I remember 2 years ago, this O-line was brutal.
I thought they made some great moves, okay? First of all, they signed Yapati. Now they draft DJ Humphreys, who will probably start on the right side, even though he's got prototypical left tackle traits, but they still have Jared Valdir. So now
Valdir, Greg, can play right. He can play on the right side.
We'll see how camp goes there. You could see Humphreys ending up on the left, by the way. But the point is they'll be good at tackle. They're much better inside. And say what you want, when Carson Palmer starts for the Cardinals, they win. He's 13-2 in his last 15 starts for Arizona. So the key for him is health. Obviously, he's up there in years. But they all of a sudden went from 2 years ago to having arguably the worst offensive line in the league to now a pretty darn good one. And you mentioned David Johnson. I think it's a very good pick. I don't think he's a foundation back, but they're not going to ask him to be that guy. He'll be a compliment to Andre Ellington. Now you have two backs who are both outstanding in the passing game and who can both line up split. So you really present a lot of stress and problems for defenses.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of an endorsement for Ellington, because I think a lot of people were thinking, oh, well, might they trade for Adrian Peterson, or
might they get a
real good power back? No, they got a player who is bigger, and look, they can't give Ellington as many touches as he had last year. Maybe if it's first and goal at the one, it'll be David Johnson. But I kind of think it was an endorsement of Ellington, which, you know, I go back to when I talked to Bruce Arians about Ellington back in 2014 at the combine. Boy, he loves him, and he kind of builds the offense around him. Well, what I thought was interesting that came out over the draft, there were some rumors about Michael Floyd. So that is weird to me, because I've also spent a lot of time, not a lot, but I've asked Arians about Floyd twice, 2 years in a row, and I seemingly loved him, but there were some trade rumors, which, you know, turned my attention squarely to John Brown. How impressive was John Brown to you last year, Greg? And can he be a quote-unquote number two receiver?
He can absolutely be that guy. But the concern with Floyd is, he's got the skill set to be a number one, but for whatever reason, I think there's now questions as to whether he can become that guy, and we're not there, so we don't know what the issues might be, but it would be nice to see Palmer play a full season, and I think if Palmer played a full season, you'd probably see Floyd's numbers be very good.
Let's go over to, let's go to the Rams. Obviously, they make the big splash.
Well, we know what they're going to do, John. They made no bones about what they're going to do with their draft, drafting Gurley. Now they have two really good backs, and they then drafted four offensive linemen. So they're going to line up and run the ball. That's not even a question.
What are your thoughts on this O-line, though? Because to me, that's the big question, huge question.
Well, they'll have a lot of competition. Havenstein is going to start a right tackle. That kid was born to play right tackle. He was the second-round pick. You know, I think they've, you know, Greg Robinson, their first-round pick from a year ago, he'll get better at left tackle. He's very athletic. They'll have really good competition inside now with the other players they drafted. So the point is, whoever plays will have won really competitive battles through training camp. But they've made it very clear, John. I mean, for fantasy purposes, you know, whether it's Gurley week one or Trey Mason, but they're going to have two really good backs, and they're going to run the ball.
How do you see, Gurley and Mason kind of complementing each other? Well, I don't exactly see that, but Mason isn't in it. And so I can see it a little bit as a, you know, look, he's, a lot of people thought, didn't think he was a true foundation back, and he won't be, obviously, if Gurley is healthy. But your thoughts on those two as a tandem?
Well, Gurley went number 10. They had to take Gurley because Gurley was a top three player in this draft. And
yep.
So this was a classic case where need met value, because they want to run. That's the way they want to play. You know, that's their profile. They've made that very clear. So once Gurley fell to them at 10, Gurley's a true foundation back. Gurley was the best back in this draft. So they drafted him. Now, they have Trey Mason. So if Gurley's truly not ready early in the season, and we won't know that yet, but they still have another back who can function very, very effectively within their profile. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know how it'll play out over time, number of carries, but the point is they are perfectly set at running back to play the way they want to play.
Yeah, and it's probably all good news for Nick Foles. I mean, you can't overexpose Nick Foles.
Absolutely good news for Nick Foles.
Yeah, and look, he'll throw it down the field. They'll run it, and they'll throw it. They'll test defenses down the field. And you do have Brian Quick, who really looked good last year, Greg, as you know. And, you know, Kenny Britt, they're not void of weapons there at receiver. Stedman Bailey.
I like Stedman Bailey. Yeah.
There was a couple week window there last year where, like, here we go. This guy is real viable. And I can't wait to see if Tavon Austin can actually do something sans Brian Schottenheimer. That is
well,
going to be intriguing.
Given the way they'll play offense, I wouldn't count on Austin, you know, to have 80 or 90 catches or anything like that. But
I'll take 39, yeah. Greg.
There you go. He could get that.
You know, that would actually be an improvement over Tavon Austin last year, 32. Okay, give me 45. Maybe that, but we can't count on that kid. We all know it in the fantasy world. It's a real disappointment, you know, coming out of that combine a couple of years ago. We were all excited, and we shouldn't have been as excited, I guess. Where are we here? NFC West, 49ers. A lot of people are really down on the Niners. I understand all the departures, some voluntary, some not. But, you know, looking at the O-line, Greg, still a decent line, don't you think? They still have Staley. Still have Boone. You still have Anthony Davis. And I guess they believe in his kid, Brandon Thomas. And they're going to run the football still. And, you know, people aren't that high on Carlos Hyde, but he's a pretty talented back. And a lot of runs last year looked like he was shot out of a cannon.
No. I mean, he was thought of very highly coming out of Ohio State. He'll get the shot this year. You know, keep in mind, they signed Reggie Bush as a compliment, as a satellite player. I still think Bush can fill that role. As we know, they signed Torrey Smith. And say what you want about Anquan Boldin. You know, every year we talk about how slow he is and all that stuff. And believe me, I do that too. But he catches 80, 85 balls every year for 1,200 yards.
Exactly. And this year will be no exception, Greg. When you look at the state of this receiving core, it screams Anquan Boldin has 88 grabs.
You're exactly right. And the big issue here is Vernon Davis. You know, what happens with Vernon Davis? You know, a little bit of a new coaching staff. Obviously, Jeep Christ has been there before, but he's the OC now. You know, when you're in charge, you change a few things the way you want it. Vernon Davis, who I believe had 25 or 26 catches last year, which was really mind-boggling, but he's still a talented vertical guy. He still can run a little bit. It'll be very interesting to see how he plays out in this offense.
Yeah, and that's interesting because we were just talking about that. Has he fallen off a cliff? Have injuries robbed him of that seam explosiveness? Because if he doesn't have that, Greg, what the hell does he have? Because he's never been a complete tight end.
No, and the other issue is now it comes down to the quarterback, and we've discussed Kaepernick, you know, endlessly, because there were times he did run down the seam last year where the ball should have been thrown to him, and it was not. So, now I'm not saying that would have given him 80 catches, but he would have done better than the 25 or 26 that he had.
Oh, no, he had like one catch for 9 yards total the last 4 weeks, which was mind-numbing.
Yeah, I mean, he had two touchdowns the first week of the season, and I'm sure you thought at that point, hey, this guy's on his way to a great year, great fantasy guy, and then it seemed like he fell off a cliff.
Yeah, what I thought that week was start your tight ends against the Cowboys, first and foremost. That I did think. Tyler Lockett for Seattle as we move along seemed like a logical fit here. He just strikes me as a good fit in this offense with Russell Wilson. Yeah, your thoughts on Lockett?
Lockett is a good combination of quick and fast. You know, he's small, but I think in this offense that doesn't necessarily rely on the big play, throwing it down the field. You know, they take their shots, but it's not built that way as a downfield passing game. I think that this kid fits really, really well running inside routes from the slot, kind of a chain mover type guy with run after the catch ability because he's a special teams demon. I mean, he was one of the best punt returners in the country. So when he catches the ball with some room, he can turn that into, you know, very good yak, as they say. So I think it's a really good pick for them.
FantasyGuru.com post-draft podcast rolls along here. I'm John Hansen along with Greg Cosell. We're in between conferences now, and we'll shift on over to the AFC. And the good news, Greg, I think we can do this conference quicker because
Whatever you want, John. I'm at your disposal.
All right, sounds good. There was not much going on here in the East, but we'll go to Miami. And again, the Dolphins continue to retool and reload a receiver, likely, obviously, with the goal of suiting Ryan Tannehill's traits and skill set a little bit better. And I don't think you love Devontae Parker, but he gives them some length. And now
I've gone back and forth on him so many times. The more I watched him, he certainly gives them length. He's a size guy. He's very good at the 50-50 balls. I don't know just how explosive he is. That was always my question. I don't think he's AJ Green, but you know, again, he is 6'3", and it's a good move for them, giving, as you said, Tannehill more weapons. Now they've got him. They've got Jennings. They've got Kenny Stills. They've got Jarvis Landry. They've got a very good and fairly deep group of wideouts. And don't forget Rishard Matthews, who, you know, has done very well in opportunities he's gotten to play in Miami.
Of course, Jordan Cameron, a major difference maker as well, if he's on the field. Your thoughts on Jay Ajayi dropping? Well, you don't have to get into that, but
I don't know why he dropped. I think he's a terrific back. I thought he was maybe the third or fourth best back in this draft based on my film study. I guess he had an injury issue. I think he's, if healthy, and that's the big if healthy, I think Ajayi is a better back than Lamar Miller, and I think he would play.
Yeah, I remember it's supposedly, allegedly, a bone-on-bone knee situation. I remember hearing that about Sean Green coming out of Iowa like 7 years ago. He's still in the league, though, Sean Green is.
Right, but he's kind of, it'll be interesting. But, I don't know. But Ajayi is very talented and a very good receiver, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And when we look at Miami's backfield and look, Lamar Miller was pretty damn good, but he only had 216 carries. It was like there was a cap on his carries. It was like, all right, you got 15 carries in the third quarter. That's it. You're done. We're not going to give you any more work. And don't you think Ajayi is a better inside dumper than a Lamar Miller? I thought Lamar Miller, look, the offense got the best out of him, but he's not really a thumper inside, Greg, is he?
No. But again, they ran a lot of those Chip Kelly principles with offensive coordinator Bill Lazor. And with that spread stuff and the gaps being created, that does suit Lamar Miller as well. But Miller's not a thumper. Ajayi is a stronger runner.
And I think that they might look to give Ajayi 150 carries right out of the gate, Greg, if he's healthy.
They could well do that, John. I think it would be smart.
So Miami's looking pretty damn good here on paper, and we're liking it. There's no question. Now, in terms of the weaponry here, there's only one ball, but boy, it's looking good for Tannehill for fantasy. Moving on to let's go to the Jets, because the Jets, they go ahead and they add another weapon here. We presume for Geno, Devin Smith. Greg, I got a chance to interview him. Pretty good kid. Maybe a one-trick pony at this juncture, but It's a pretty good trick because
it's a trick the Jets needed because they have Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker. They had no speed. They had that. They didn't have the dimension of speed. And
Devin spread it out a little bit, Greg. That's he likes to spread it out.
So Devin Smith is your classic speed guy. I think that's all he'll be used for early on because he needs a lot of work in other areas of receiving. But he can lift the top off of coverages.
Give me your ranking in terms of talent and effectiveness of Chris Ivory, a healthy Stephen Ridley, and Zach Stacy. Go.
Well, I think Ivory and Ridley will get the bulk of the carries. I think they're the better backs than Stacy. So that to me is the way it'll play out, assuming everyone's healthy.
Bryce Petty for the long term. If Chan Gailey's still here in 2-3 years, could this actually wind up being a good marriage?
Could be. I think with Petty, it's so hard to say. He's not a factor this year. We probably don't really need to spend a lot of time on him.
Well, I always kind of harken back. I'm just amazed still what he got out of Tyler Thigpen, Chan Gailey, for the Kansas City Chiefs back in 08.
That's correct.
That. The Patriots, how much going on here in New England, other than Deflategate? I don't know what else to say. There's not a damn thing going on here in terms of what we had.
They didn't take a skill position play. I mean, they took a tight end late in the sixth round who actually he's a very intriguing player, but I don't know if he'll be relevant this season. So other than that, you have exactly what, you had last year. Very little will change.
AJ Derby, you like him?
Yep. He went to Iowa as a quarterback. He transferred. He became a tight end. He's actually fairly gifted as an athlete.
Buffalo Bills, not a lot of action here, but they do use a second round pick on a guard in John Miller, and we'll see if they can get some more out of Kwanjo or anything out of Kwanjo there at right tackle. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time here. We've talked about McCoy. If you want to hear our thoughts on LeSean McCoy in this offense and behind this O-line, you can listen to the previous podcast. That would be the post-free agency podcast, but nothing paramount to cover here with the Buffalo Bills. So let's move on. And let's go to the NFC North. And boy, how about them Ravens? I mean, Ozzie Newsome, Greg, does it through the draft. Normally not about need, but I guess they kind of got lucky because, they're more usually about BPA, best player available. But I feel like they kind of got both with their selections of Breshad Perriman and Max Williams. Perriman is maybe not initially, Greg, but I believe he's an upgrade over Torrey Smith. I think he's got to be more of a route runner coming out of college.
Well, style-wise, he is. Perriman, he's been compared to a lot of different wide receivers and all really good ones. I mean, Michael Irvin, and I respect Michael Irvin immensely when he evaluates wideouts, he compared him to Andre Johnson. I thought that when I watched him that there were elements of Julio Jones in the way he moved for that size because he looks like a big man on film. So this was a very good move. And then they traded up to get Max Williams. And Max Williams is the best tight end prospect in the draft, if you're looking for a receiver, that is. And so they clearly address needs. And then a very intriguing player, John. Don't fall asleep on this kid in the fourth round. Buck Allen out of USC.
Yes.
I think he's a really good fit in Mark Trestman's offense, and the reason I say that is...
I know what you're going to say. Receiving, right? It's got to be receiving.
Yes, but I also think that there were some similarities in running style to Matt Forte.
That's true. I stood next to him at the combine. He's a bigger dude. Yeah,
he's 6 feet, 220. So don't fall asleep on this kid. Obviously, they re-signed Forsett, and he'll go into camp as the guy. And there's no reason to believe he won't be. But Forsett's not big. I think they're going to need two backs throughout the course of this season. They don't really have a second back. It could very well be Buck Allen.
Yeah, and if Mark Trestman's still running the show here, let's say in 2 years, Justin Forsett will be 31, 32, and we can't expect him to be there. So you'd have to give the edge to Javorius Allen over Lorenzo Taliaferro. I mean, Taliaferro had a couple of catches last year. Yeah. Okay.
The Taliaferro has no hips. He's just a straight downhill guy. I don't think he really works in this offense that effectively.
Yeah, that's true. It is a new offense here. Good O-line too, though, and they should have success. Cincinnati, boy, they love their offensive lineman, Gray. I mean, this you got to love it for fantasy purposes. This line, I mean, Andrew Whitworth was great last year. Yeah, you re-signed Zeitler, and now you've got Jake Fisher and a Bowie. So they're pretty low.
Well, they're figuring Andre Smith, they're not going to re-sign him. They're figuring as Whitworth gets older, he's going to move inside, which he played last year toward the end of the year very, very well. And so they're figuring they've got their two new tackles. And then to me, the guy to keep your eye on, and I don't know when it will happen, John. I'm not suggesting it's this year, although it could be, is their third-round pick, Tyler Kroft. He's a tight end from Rutgers, very athletic, reminded me in many ways of Zach Ertz, the way he moved, and he's a better blocker. And they like to run a lot of two tight end sets. And Gresham's gone, so it's now they have two Tylers, the two Ts at tight end.
Yep, both former wide receivers. Both kind of play like that, Greg.
Yep. So,
Tyler Eifert is kind of on notice here. It's like, dude, you gotta actually do something.
He missed all of last season, but he's very talented.
Yes, he is. I'm not bailing just yet. But if he doesn't stay healthy this year, then all bets are off. I think Tyler Kroft is a pretty good replacement here for him potentially. All right, let's go to Cleveland because I thought for sure they'd be a little bit more skill player oriented, but no,
they weren't.
But they didn't draft
a wide receiver.
They did actually. Vince Molly.
Oh yeah, they did. That's right. That's right. My bad.
Big, real big kid. But how about the addition of Cam Irvin though? This line now, Alex Mack could be gone, but
that's why they did it.
Yeah,
the player who's most interesting. The most interesting player, John, from a fantasy standpoint, will be Duke Johnson, their third-round pick, because Duke Johnson is a really good runner-receiver. There have been comparisons to Gio Bernard. His style of play is reminiscent of a Thurman Thomas. So Duke Johnson is a guy that could get meaningful carries in this offense because they're going to need some explosiveness somewhere, and he's really the only guy who can bring any explosiveness at all.
No question. And look, I'll give you a little bit of insight here that they're down on Terrence West. I mean, it's frustrating, but they're down on him. He's clearly not doing something right off the field and in the classroom, whatever. Crowell, I think people have overrated him a little bit. He's not a lead back, I don't think. I think it's going to be Duke Johnson if he does what he needs to do. Greg, I think he's going to be able to get 60% of the work here in this backfield. What do you think of him in this scheme, the zone scheme?
Duke Johnson?
Yes, that's his game.
He fits very well. You know, the big question, of course, is people look at size, but he's kind of built like a Frank Gore type back. So, you know, maybe he could be a lead back. I don't think people view him that way. I think people see him more, as I said, like the Gio Bernards of the world. But it's very possible, John. I mean, you can't rule that out.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what they're actually hoping for. We'll see about it, and we'll move on to the Pittsburgh Steelers. How about the I don't think he's going to make a splash, but how about the Sammy Coates pick? That I was surprised a little bit, and it's an indictment likely on Marcus Wheaton. But that's another intriguing weapon, Greg, in this offense for Big Ben.
Well, they've got a championship offense. You know, once Bell gets back from his suspension, they've got a championship offense. And now they drafted Coates. And it's funny because I said that Coates was a similar prospect to Martavis Bryant. I didn't view him as good a prospect as Martavis Bryant, but they're similar. So they've got speed to take the top off. They got the best intermediate receiver in the game in Antonio Brown. And Wheaton is still there. So it's, you know, they've got a really interesting group of receivers now, John.
Really good O-line, and they drafted Jesse James, who they view as potentially taking over for Heath Miller.
Maybe as soon as
2016. So keep our dynasty alert there. All right, I think we're done the NFC North.
That would be the AFC North, by the way.
Or AFC, yeah, my bad. AFC North. Let's go to the South, and let's go to the Colts. And what the hell's going on out there with the Philip Dorsett?
Well, they've got a little speed. They've got a little speed, John.
Fastest, you know, receiving duo in the league, right? I mean, give me a duo that's faster, right?
For sure, and they still, and of course, they still have Andre Johnson. They still have Dante Moncrief, who, by the way, Moncrief can run too. He's just bigger, but he can run too. So they've got the fastest group of receivers in the NFL.
Plus, two pretty good tight ends.
And the other weapons they can play any number of ways on offense. Any way you want, they can line up.
It's a complete embarrassment of riches. Pep Hamilton, though, they do want to run it. Are we to believe that with Frank Gore now in the mix? Or have they kind of, with this pick of Dorsett, said, all right, you know what? And this is what I was saying all last summer. We've got Andrew Luck. Screw it. Let's just put it all in his hands. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they're going to run the ball. I don't think this pick of Dorsett. I think this was a classic case, personally, where they had this player rated highly. He fell to 29, and they jumped on him. I don't think it was a case where they went into this draft saying, oh, we're going to get faster on the outside. I think this was a case where they felt they couldn't pass on Dorsett. I think they're still going to run the ball. That's why they signed Frank Gore.
How the heck are they going to get meaningful snaps, though, out of Dorsett? I mean, that seems challenging. I mean, he's going to be like a sub-package type of player.
Yeah, he will be, but I think as a rookie, you know, I think if they can get 20 snaps a game out of him, 25 snaps a game, they'll be very happy.
Yeah.
You know, because their top three receivers will be Hilton, Moncrief, and Andre Johnson, and Dorsett will come in specific packages, as you said.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible where we were with Luck in this receiving core in 2013 and where we are now, how quickly things change in just 2 years. Jacksonville, they make the move at running back. And maybe some people thought they overpaid a little bit, but you like T.J. Yeldon.
Not me.
And you think it's a good fit here in this zone scheme.
Really good fit. Really good fit. You know, everybody knocks Yeldon's speed. That would be about 10th on a list of 10 things you'd look for in a running back. I think he's really has a great feel for NFL-style running. Great lateral agility and quickness running inside. And to me, that is absolutely critical. He can get through small cracks. He was similar to Frank Gore in that regard. And he's a big, big man. I mean, he's 225-pound man. And he almost looks like he could get bigger.
Untapped potential. Is his best football still in front of him? And that's been a challenge.
Could be.
It could be.
Those are always tough questions to answer. I'm just evaluating the traits, and I like the traits.
Gotcha.
Do I think right away you're going to give him the ball 25 times a game? Absolutely not. But I think he has traits. And don't forget, he doesn't need to do that. They still have Denard Robinson, who ended up for 4 or 5 weeks last year being their feature back, and now he doesn't need to be that. Now he could be the change-up. This is a nice little group with some explosiveness in the backfield.
Yeah, give him 14 carries a game, T.J. Yeldon, you know, and that call it a day, you know, 225 carries, something like that, 230. We'll see what he can do in the passing attack. Any thoughts on the O-line here?
They drafted a guard in the third round, A.J. Cann from South Carolina, 4-year starter. I think he can play guard. I think he could probably play center. But to me, he's a 10-year starter in the NFL.
Teamed with Jeremy Parnell, interesting free agent acquisition at right tackle. I mean, that's not going to bowl you over here. I guess Zane Beatles is a bit real problem. And Luke Jokel, I mean, is Luke Jokel?
He hasn't played well in 2 years. But let me just throw another name out that I think is really interesting. And they are really building a very good crop of young receivers. I think Rashad Green from Florida State, the 5th round pick, He was a really polished route runner. You know, he's just 180 pounds, but I think that he's a guy who's going to play in this league, and I think he's going to be productive. Now, productive not meaning 90 catches, but he'll be productive in his role.
Yeah, and Ace Sanders is not really happening for him.
No.
But the fact that they didn't draft an Amari Cooper, for example, that's great news for Allen Robinson. And why not just roll with Robinson, Greg, as your ex? I mean, he's not a stud, but he was really good last year.
Well, they got Marquise Lee. They got Allen Robinson. I mean, they have young receivers. They're counting on these guys to get better. They drafted them last year fairly high. They're counting on these guys to get better.
All right, here we go. We've got to cover Tennessee, and I just don't like any of this. I just have a bad feeling about it. Dorial Green-Beckham, I know he's a beast. I just don't like the fit here. I just have an underwhelming sense about it as a whole. Do you have any thoughts? I'm disappointed for Zach Mettenberger. I'm more concerned about these receivers. I just question this organization's ability to have the correct plan for Marcus Mariota. I have not heard you talk about this, Greg, but I've heard through whispers that there was some derision within the organization about this pick, which that's not good. But your thoughts on Mariota here in Tennessee?
Well, they drafted him, so he's going to be their quarterback when you draft a guy too. But see, I think, quite honestly, that they're doing the right thing with what they did in the rest of the draft. I'll probably be in the minority here, but they drafted a fullback in the fourth round. And
oh, that's,
I think
that's
that,
a sign.
What's that?
That's a sign.
See, I think that's a positive, not a negative, because I think most people's response is going to be, well, why are you drafting a fullback? Because you just got to let Mariota do what he does best. That's great, but, John, we know that that doesn't work. At some point in the NFL, because you can't play these kinds of spreads all the time. Now, we know some teams do, like the Eagles with Chip Kelly, but those teams struggle when they don't have scheme supremacy, like the red zone, like third down. So you're going to have to build a multidimensional offense that has more conventional NFL concepts in it. And I think the drafting of a fullback and then David Cobb in the fifth round is really smart, because you want to build your offense as a complete offense. You know, I've said this numerous times, and Mariota will run around. There's no question, because that's one of his best traits right now. But, you know, quarterbacks, as they get hit and they get a little older, they slow down. Defenses don't. So eventually you're going to have to learn how to play quarterback from the pocket, as I refer to it, NFL quarterback. So given that they drafted Mariota, I think they're doing the right thing.
Well, the one thing I did like was the addition of Cobb, and we talked about that. We covered that in our on the website and with the fullback. Do you think maybe they're looking at maybe a little bit of what Seattle did with Russell Wilson, the success they had, and it was all about started with Marshawn Lynch running the football?
Yes. Now, I don't think they have that back. Cobb is probably their best runner right now, and they just drafted him, but they don't have Marshawn Lynch. But I think that they're well aware. Wisenhunt's been around long enough, and he gets it. He understands you can't just run spread offenses in the NFL, because there are times in the game, and these are the critical situations, where you can't win with scheme supremacy. And, you know, Mariota was not very good in the red zone at Oregon, because that scheme supremacy doesn't work in constricted areas of the field.
Let's move on here to Houston. We have plenty of time to digest the Tennessee Titans this year and Marcus Mariota. Well, actually, not a ton going on here in Houston. I forgot your thoughts on Jalen Strong, because there's a wide range of opinion on him. He's a little inconsistent. He's kind of like an Anquan Boldin. He's always covered, but he always comes down with the ball.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. He's got very strong hands. He's very good at high-pointing the ball. I think that he's does not get open really easily at this point against man coverage. He reminded me in some ways of Jordan Matthews, probably a little stronger kid in terms of his hands. I think you have to scheme him open early in his career till you can teach him how to work against man. He struggled against some of the better corners he faced, like Marcus Peters and Steven Nelson from Oregon State. So, you know, I think that a lot of people viewed him as, oh, he's a steal because of where he was drafted. And, you know, John, I don't get into exactly where guys get drafted, but to me, he was kind of drafted where he should get drafted.
Over to the AFC West, and we obviously need to talk Chargers because Melvin Gordon landed in arguably the best situation in the league for fantasy in terms of stepping right into a backfield and kind of leading the way. Zone blocking scheme. Greg, your thoughts on Melvin Gordon behind this O-line and in this offense?
Well, he's going to get the chance to be the feature back, as you well know, and he's a explosive kid. I like Melvin Gordon. I mean, I think the big question for him that I'm anxious to see is the difference between NFL running and college running. He's going to have more holes that are kind of closed. He's going to have to get through much smaller cracks. And I'm anxious to see, because he's got a home run mentality, if he stops his feet and looks for the home run, or if he just tries to take what's there and just run hard inside. Now, he's a hard runner. I don't know if he's a truly powerful runner, but he's a hard runner. So that, yeah, to me is the thing I'm anxious to see. But I think it was a great pick for them. They need a run game.
Yeah. The one thing that to consider, though, is Tom Telesco told me 2 years ago, he loves running back by committees. And I think the head coach McCoy likes it as well. Not that they have a great alternative here. And Danny Woodhead, though, I think is going to get on the field, Greg. I mean, I know they kind of waxed poetic about Melvin Gordon's pass protection.
No, he's not going to play. He's not going to play in their sub packages, right? I mean, not on third down. I mean, on first down, if they're in three wide, he'll be on the field. But he's not going to play on third down early on.
First and second down back, and if it's first and goal at the one, we're giving the ball to Melvin Gordon, Greg.
You are giving it to Melvin Gordon, yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. But do you think that there is a little bit more downside than maybe some people who just know the name Melvin Gordon believe right now?
Oh, I don't know if there's downside. This guy's not going to be a stiff, John. I mean, what we're talking about is degree of how good he'll be. I mean, Melvin Gordon has very good talent. He's not going to be he's not going to be a guy who rushes for 3.2 yards a carry. You know, we're just trying to figure out if he's ultimately a true workhorse, and that remains to be seen. Assuming he's used like that, they're still going to line up in the gun. I think Phillip Rivers has been in the gun more than any quarterback in the league the last 2 years, maybe with the exception of Stafford. So, this is not one of those just let's pound it up inside with two backs and two tight ends offenses.
Gotcha. Oakland Raiders. As we move along here, and got to give him credit for giving Derek Carr some weapons, first and foremost with Amari Cooper. They already let James Jones go, so I would imagine it'll be Cooper at Z and Crabtree at X for the most part. I like the addition of the tight end Clive Wofford. Seems
so
pro-ready to me. Seems pro-ready, Greg, here.
Yeah.
Shaping it pretty well here, this offense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think they've got the Cooper pick was to me really good. I thought he was the best receiving prospect in this draft. Like you said, they've got Crabtree, who, you say what you want about Crabtree, he's got some talent. You know, he's, and Wolford, I think, can come in and start and be a kind of an every down tight end.
Yeah, so not much else to say here. The O-line's not that bad.
No.
Other than Khalif Barnes, but it's not too bad. They bring in Rodney Hudson at center. That was something of a coup from the Kansas City Chiefs.
The kid they drafted in the fourth round, John Feliciano out of Miami, is a mauler and a nasty guy. And whether he plays this year or not, who can say? But he fits their profile as a guard, and that's what they're looking for: nasty guys.
Not much going on here in Kansas City at all, really. I mean, they drafted a center. They drafted a backup tight end. But it was really all about that secondary in this draft with their first pick of Marcus Peters. But not a bad roster. Not a bad roster at all, Greg. And look, a friend of mine talked with Travis Kelce recently. And Kelce said, hey, I feel a lot better with the knee this year. That's kind of scary because he moved like a top four tight end last year in the NFL, Travis Kelce.
I mean, and keep one player in mind. They did draft another wideout who can run
Chris
in the
Conley.
third round, Chris Conley, okay?
Yeah.
And he was an under-the-radar player because he didn't have huge numbers at Georgia. But he's 6'2", about 212 pounds, and he can run. He's a vertical guy. Now, he's not a complete receiver, but at least he gives them something down the field potentially.
You know what, let me back up for a moment because I failed to mention for the Raiders that they did not draft a running back, which I kind of view as an endorsement of sorts for Latavius Murray.
Latavius Murray?
They've been a little frustrated with him, I was told. Doesn't always kind of hit it up in there consistently. Maybe like LeGarrette Blount, remember early in his career?
Yeah.
He kind of did that, but boy. You know, I was talking to MJD about him. I was at the draft doing some radio with MJD, and he likes him. He does have some concerns about the upright running style, but in a pretty effective offense, let's assume that they continue to progress. And why wouldn't we assume that?
Well, they're gonna give him a shot. There's no question.
I mean, how can he fail, Gray? How can Murray fail? He's so big, and he falls forward for 4 yards effortlessly, and obviously the home run speed and again, a big back in pass pro. I know they added Roy Helu, but I'm trying to find reasons how Latavius Murray can fail. And other than an injury, I really don't have any.
Well, he's the guy, John. So barring injury, he's going to get the carries.
Yeah. Yeah. But do you have any thoughts on, did you like what you saw out of him? I guess a small sample size last year, but
I mean, he's a long strider. He's tall. He's got some size to him. I do think he's a little upright, which
yeah.
An upright, you know, everybody talks about being upright, guys taking hits. To me, it's more of an issue of lateral agility. It's tougher
right.
to be quick laterally when you're upright. And
yeah.
I think that's really the issue is he ultimately going to be a straight line runner, which means that he's limited, or is he going to have the ability to bounce in and out of holes and make those kinds of cuts?
Well, I kind of see him as like a big straight line runner who'll get 3 to 4 yards if there's nothing there, and who has the ability to pop off a 40-yard run if there's a crease.
Right.
That's kind of what I see, and we'll see about his role in the passing attack because that could be critical for him. Helu is certainly going to be involved. All right, last team here. It's Denver, and there's not much going on here. Jeff Heuerman is someone maybe people should keep an eye on for keeper leagues, although. You know, Peyton Manning's not going to play forever, but anything jumping out at you on Heuerman? They didn't draft a running back. They didn't draft a wide receiver of note. I mean, kind of status quo here. Defensively, obviously, they added Shane Ray.
Yeah, Heuerman is probably a down-the-road guy. I think he's pretty athletic. You know, I think he lined up in a number of spots for Ohio State. He fell under the radar because he didn't catch a lot of balls. I think his skill set, if he were to reach his ceiling, his skill set would be a lot like a Heath Miller, John.
Yeah, there you go. Sorry, my
but
phone,
I mean that won't happen year one. But I think if he could reach that, that's the kind of player Jeff Heuerman would be like.
I think we've covered it all here, Greg. It's been 77 minutes. It's
there. You
an
go.
Exciting 77 minutes. We remind everyone to follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Cosell. We'll have our post-draft rookie report up on the website tomorrow, Friday, and 2015 projections are coming. Greg, are you excited about the release? You know, this is my answering machine not turning off right now. Let me throw the phone across the room. Are you excited, Greg, about it's hello, CVS Pharmacy? About the release of the 2015 projections at fantasyguru.com, which is forthcoming. How excited are you about that, Greg?
John, I am on the edge of my chair right now. I can't wait to see it.
All right, for Greg Cosell, we appreciate it, Greg. Great stuff as always. For Greg Cosell, I'm John Hansen. We'll talk to you next time.